Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, February 17th meeting of the Minnesota House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you have the contents of today's meeting in your virtual packet made available to them. And for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent out for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hands via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please take the roll?
Chair Gavney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha.
He was excused this morning. Maybe not.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Markwart.
Present.
Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Got it. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And Representative Kreisha. And I will check on him, but that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Jordan, have you had a look, had the opportunity to look at the minutes from our Tuesday, February 16th meeting? And if so, would you move their approval?
I have looked at the minutes, Mr. Chair, and I move their approval.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Jordan motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the Jordan motion to, I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, thank you to the minute taker to note that you had an inadvertent motion at the end of the meeting. So, yes.
Okay. Well done. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Then, all those in favor of the Jordan motion to approve the minutes from our Tuesday, February 16th meeting, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Chair Markwart, we have one bill on the agenda today, and it is yours. Would you like to move House File 498 to be before the committee for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move House File 498 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the E12 finance omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you very much, Chair Markwart. You may proceed with introducing your bill.
So, well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 498, is you've been on the committee a few years, is nothing new to you. But what this would do is help school districts that are in a cooperative type of situation or a joint powers agreement to provide them with more flexibility, more kind of avenues in which they can try to maintain their facilities when they come up with these cooperative agreements. And as we know, cooperative agreements or joint powers agreements, those type of things, are usually formed when school districts individually cannot provide a service on their own. So it might be special education, could be area learning centers, could be career and technical programs. So they come together to form these cooperatives. In the Twin Cities, basically this cooperative model is called an intermediate. There are four intermediate districts in the metro area. There's about 45 member independent schools that are part of this. In rural Minnesota, however, things are not quite as well organized over the years, and these cooperative agreements tend to fall under different areas of state law. So you've got cooperatives, you actually have education districts, you've got actually just joint powers agreements. And so, you know, one thing that school officials, what I've heard around the state, especially in rural Minnesota, is there just isn't kind of a consistency in the laws that deal with these kind of the same type of model, but they're called different things. And in rural Minnesota, you know, you've got real sparsely populated or districts that have small amount of students. They might be stretched out between a lot of miles between them. And so they're trying to, you know, provide special education. And so they'll try to go into an agreement. And there's some obstacles that have kind of prevented them from doing things. For example, let's say a member school district in a cooperative has an old elementary school that is vacant now. And so the law isn't clear necessarily is if they could now get lease funding for a building that the school district owns. And yet that might be the only viable facility to do something like that. So what House File 498 does is really provides flexibility and enhances a couple existing revenue streams. And so the one revenue stream is the long-term facility maintenance program, which came about in 2015. And what that does, it allows schools districts to get up to about $380 of per pupil funding if they put together a deferred maintenance plan. It has to be 10 years in length, and then they get approval from the state and so forth. And that ended up replacing a lot of different levies back in 2015. At any rate, right now, intermediate districts can go out and issue bonds. But most of these cooperatives really can't do that. As far as this long-term facility maintenance, they can't issue these bonds. And so this bill would allow them to issue the bonds as long as there's a resolution stating how all the member schools would end up paying for that. So that's kind of the main point there. The other point has to do with the other revenue stream is the lease levy. Right now, districts are able to levy up to $212 per pupil for a lease levy. But if you are a member district of one of the four intermediate districts, you are able to levy an additional $65 per pupil unit. And so what this would allow is these cooperatives, these education districts, these joint powers agreements in rural Minnesota to also do the same. And so the cost is about $8,000 would be an increased cost to the agricultural school bond credit. And it would also increase the levy by about $1.4 million. So that is the bill. I do have a few testifiers, and certainly Mr. Strom can correct me along the way if there's anything that needs to be cleaned up with that. As I look at this, rural districts are in a lot of different situations, and they're trying to form these co-op models, if you will. And we're just trying to bring kind of the law, make it more consistent among all of these type of models. And so I do have a couple testifiers with me. I've got Cliff Kermati, Executive Director at Southwest West Central Service Co-op, and Deb Marcotte, Executive Director at the Hiawatha Valley Education District. And Mr. Chair, if we could have those folks testify at this time, that would be great.
Chair Dabney, you're muted.
I knew that. Thank you, Ms. Bird. Certainly, Chair Marquardt, well, let's go to testifiers and then we'll come back to Mr. Strom to review some of the spreadsheets that he's provided for today's hearing. Mr. Carmody, if you would please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Representative Daphne and members. My name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director of Southwest West Central Service Cooperative in Marshall, Minnesota. SWWC is one of nine regional Minnesota service cooperatives. I want to thank you for your time today to testify on behalf of this bill, a bill that is critically important to us in supporting the work we do in providing special education services to the students in our region. SWWC serves more than 50 public, private, and charter schools in 18 counties of Southwest and West Central Minnesota. I also want to thank you, as Representative Marquardt indicated, for your steadfast work on this bill over many sessions. We are also pleased that this issue was addressed by the MDE work group on school finance and was included in their final recommendations. However, it is well past time to get this bill passed into law. The students attending our programs are on a continuum of severe disabilities to having social, emotional, and behavior issues in their resident school district. These students attend school full-time in our programs, with the program administered in separate facilities operated by SWWC. Enrollment in our program continues to grow. This is truly an if-you-build-it-they-will-come challenge. Since the 2015-16 school year, we have expanded access to our programs through the addition of Learning Center sites in our region. As a result, our enrollment has grown by nearly 70% over that same time period. Historically, the learning centers have been located in old school buildings, more often than not vacated due to new facility construction by one of our school districts. Think of an old elementary school decommissioned by the school district and used by SWWC for housing a program for our most at-risk special needs students. These buildings were not designed to meet the needs of our special needs students. Very often, there are significant maintenance issues and costs with these buildings. As a result, some of our facilities are inappropriate for meeting the needs of our kids. We do our best, but frankly, that's not good enough, and we can do better. There's a lot of discussion around equity today, and rightfully so. This is an issue of equity. How is it that our sister school districts, who are members of an intermediate school district, have access to these funding mechanisms for their shared programs, but greater Minnesota cooperatives do not? We are not asking for anything that some of our school districts already have. If this is good for Minnetonka, it's good for Mineota. These programs are regional programs meeting the needs of students from multiple school districts. No one school district should be responsible for providing facilities for a shared program. This bill provides tools to help our schools to share in these facility costs. Our students, our member school students, deserve better than what we're able to do today. This bill, when passed into law, will not address all the challenges facing our schools in providing appropriate facilities to meet the needs of this population of students. However, it will provide a foundation upon which we can build and to begin to make more progress toward that end. Thank you, Representative Daphne and members.
Thank you, Mr. Carmody. Ms. Marcotte, would you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony? Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Deb Marcotte, and I'm the Executive Director for Hiawatha Valley Education District. Our district office is located in Winona, Minnesota, and we serve 13 member districts around the city of Winona. It's a pleasure for me to be with you today and an honor to speak on this issue. I have some prepared statements that I would like to read, and I also have just a couple of notes in that I support what Cliff has said 100%, and that is we are operating our organization in setting for behavior and ASD, that's autism spectrum disorder programs. These are students that are unable to be in the traditional school setting. They are with us full time, and we are operating three sites and approximately an hour and a half drive away from each other. which means we need to be operating these sites in what would be considered lesser grade facilities. And then we need to have three times the staff that we would need to have if we were in a consolidated site. So transportation from one end of the district to the other is an hour and a half bus ride or van ride or vehicle ride for the students attending one way. So that's 3 hours of transportation time for students that need special programs. Then we need not only the vehicles, but the para drivers to run these vehicles. And so the staffing for these programs is becoming unattainable, unmanageable, unworkable in almost every regard. The other thing I wanted to mention was that we've looked at facilities planning in Hiawatha Valley Education District over the last 10 years. And we always run into the roadblock that is, some districts are in various stages of bond work within their own districts and just do not have the capacity to add on more. So with 13 member districts, someone is always doing something that prevents the education district as a whole from moving forward. So we have been stalled out with this. As an example, to put together an estimate of a $15 million project, it would cost our individual taxpayers across our education district in the roughly five counties we operate in, somewhere between $2 and $14 per individual taxpayer to collectively come up with a $15 million facility that we would need. So that's an example, and that information is currently 2 years old, because that's the last time we ran into a facility study where finances derailed the whole process. So in regard to the LTFM dollars, in regard to the lease levy, this $65 per pupil unit credit would allow us to finally move forward. It is an issue with equity. The metro students are getting different opportunities than the rural students. There is no question. So those are the comments that I had, and I have a further statements if you would like to hear more, but I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Marcotte. Representative Kreischer, welcome to the committee. Thank you for joining us. Mr. Strom, they use terms like the egg bond credit. Can you help the committee, please?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, when a school district issues bonds, those bonds are repaid with a local school district levy. And a number of years ago, the tax committee, chairs Marcourt and Drazkowski, were the primary forces behind the agricultural building bond program. And what that does is it essentially credits for farmers a portion of the debt service levy that they would annually make, that comes back to the farmers in a credit. So the school district remains unaffected, but instead of the tax falling heavily on ag lands in greater Minnesota for debt service projects, much of it is picked up by the credit. The credit is being phased in over time and will max out at 70% of the amount of debt service levy paid by the agricultural lands. Representative Drazkowski and Marcourt worked for several years on this before this was implemented, but that credit essentially is replacing the local levy paid by farmers on their ag lands with a state aid payment. And as Representative Marcourt mentioned, the levy impact of the bill is about $1.4 million. A small portion of that levy impact is due to additional bonds. Those bonds then would have that very small increase in the ag credit, and that's where that $8,000 state aid cost comes from. We've got more resources we'd be glad to share with you on the school building bond ag credit, those are mentioned in the fiscal note that Ms. Adrians will talk about, but essentially that's where that provision comes from. When you're ready, Mr. Chair, I can address the two printouts that are in the packet, but in answer to your question, that's a quick explanation of the school building bond ag credit.
Thank you for that, Mr. Strom. Why don't you move on to the two spreadsheets that you provided for members today?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. There are two spreadsheets in your packet today. The first of those is simply a list, but thought it would be helpful for members to see which school districts are in which cooperatives. As the witnesses testified today, there are a whole number of different structures throughout the state. In the metropolitan area, the intermediate school districts are the type of what I refer to as a joint statutory powers agreement that provides these services. And in Greater Minnesota, as Ms. Marquardt's area is an ed district, sometimes there are ed districts providing these services. Sometimes there are special education cooperatives. And in the whole southwest part of the state, the service cooperative, which Ms. Carmody is from, provides these kinds of low incidence special education services. There are also a few cooperatives left for vocational programming, but in general, the majority of the cooperatives in Minnesota now primarily serve as a special education cooperative to provide those services that an individual district might not provide on their own. So the first list in your packet, and I'm happy to share that information in spreadsheet form if you would like to sort it in different ways, but it's just a list by school district in ascending district order, and you can see either whether the district's in an intermediate school district or a cooperative and what the name of those cooperatives are. And that gives you a sense that that most districts are in cooperatives, and you can see which ones. In terms of the metropolitan area, only a few of the metropolitan districts are not in a cooperative, primarily Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnetonka, and Apple Valley. There's been some shifting amongst the districts on which cooperatives they belong to, and that's probably the case in both the service cooperative area and in, I'm not sure if the Hiawatha Education District that a member come or go, but generally there are abilities for school districts to enter or leave a cooperative. And when they do, there may be some costs they're still responsible for, but the idea is that local school boards make the decision which type of cooperative makes most belong to. The second printout in your packet, Mr. Chair and members, shows for each school district the current amount of levy for the building lease and then for the long-term facilities maintenance revenue. This spreadsheet on the building lease category, you can see that there's a total of about $88 million in building lease for the current school year, and you can look up and down the list and see how that varies. You can see that the average is about $93 per pupil, and for those districts that are over $212 per pupil, those are districts that are part of an intermediate school district that have access to the additional $65 per pupil. The next set of columns on the revenue spreadsheet show the long-term facilities maintenance program. And as Representative Marquardt mentioned, that was a combination of health and safety and alternative facilities and the deferred maintenance program all into one program to try and simplify and raise the levels of funding for school districts using that program. You can see about $566 million a year in revenue in that program. And it's split between aid and levy, about $108 million in aid and $457 million of levy. So all told, $87 million on building lease and about $566 million on the long-term facilities maintenance revenue. And what this bill would do is increase those amounts just very slightly by about $1.4 million per year if the member districts of cooperatives were outside of the metropolitan area were able to access the revenue in the same manner as those members of the intermediate school districts. Mr. Chair, if there are any questions, I'm happy to address those. Otherwise, perhaps Ms. Adrians would like to talk about the fiscal note for a moment.
It looks like Representative Erickson has her hand up. I trust it's to your work, Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Strom, you know, I'm looking at the printout that you provided for us. School districts can book these dollars, can they not, and just let them accumulate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's right. Both on the long-term facilities revenue, there's a formula-driven amount, and a school district can that's not at the max if it didn't have all the projects that year. it could roll that money forward to the next year. For the building lease category, that actually is based on the amount of the leases that the school district has entered into. So that the building lease essentially washes each year because the district has to have the lease costs in order to do the levy for that amount. But you're correct on long-term facilities maintenance, which is the majority of the revenue on the printout, that a school district that is using the $380 per pupil, if it doesn't have enough projects one year, it can roll those dollars forward. There's a couple of caveats. If it's a health and safety project that is separate from the $380 per pupil, then that money has to be spent in that year for that purpose. But generally what you're saying is.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. I know that the Princeton District has booked these funds to add additional instructional space or to make improvements. And so it's worked out very well. But constituents always ask about that. And so, I wanted to clarify that that is something that is legitimate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's certainly legitimate on the $380 portion of the long-term facilities maintenance revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, Ms. Adrian, if you could review the fiscal note for the committee. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I actually don't know that I have very much to add. Representative Marquardt and Mr. Strom went through and referenced both the $8,000 in state aid that would be a result of the impact on the school building bond ad credit. And then the levy impact on both, for both the levy authority and the lease levy, that impact is assumed to be about $1.4 million, which they mentioned. And that's about it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. So Representative Marquardt, it's back to you. Do you have any closing comments?
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for having this meeting today and being able to really talk about this subject. This is, as you heard from the testifiers, this is extremely important for rural Minnesota districts who are, trying to make ends meet and also trying to provide top-notch education in the area of special ed education especially. So this will give these districts more flexibility in being able to work out something in their cooperative agreement that will satisfy the needs for their students. And every situation is a little different, as you probably heard. So this would be very helpful for them. And also, Mr. Chair, if I could maybe make this just a little more attractive, I do see property tax chair Joachim in this committee meeting, and maybe, just maybe, if you wanted to keep things levy neutral, maybe there's another committee somewhere in this body that could help provide the funds to keep this levy neutral for you, Mr. Chair.
It's a fascinating question, Chair Marquardt. I appreciate your bringing that up.
But thank you very much for considering House File 498. I really appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you. Members, with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion to lay House File 498 over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, that completes the work that we had allotted for today. Thank you all for your time and attention, and we are adjourned.